So in this talk, I will describe a system that enables two or more users to communicate over a public network. In this case, we target the internet without anyone else knowing that they're communicating. So on the internet, messages are routed through a large number of service providers that can observe all communication. And one issue with this arrangement is that some of the messages that users send on the internet can be quite sensitive. For example, soccer superstar Lionel Messi might ask someone about his injury, and he might prefer if this request were kept private. Fortunately, he can use end-to-end encryption to hide the content of his message. But one limitation of this approach is that encryption on its own does not hide metadata, such as the parties involved in a communication. As a result, since service providers can tell that Messi is actually talking to his orthopedic surgeons, they can infer a great deal of information about the content of this message. Indeed, metadata can be quite sensitive. It can be used to infer people's diseases. It can be used to infer the occurrence of pregnancy, and even the type of relationships between users. It is our belief that keeping this metadata private is a desirable goal. And this goal can be summarized with this picture. In a scenario with three users, A, B, and C, an adversary should not be able to distinguish between a scenario where A is talking to C, one where A is talking to B, and one where A is not talking to anyone else at all. Similar objectives have been studied since the 80s, and three decades later, there are hundreds of protocols and systems that achieve this goal. One popular system is Tor, where users encode their messages with multiple layers of encryption, and then they route these messages through servers distributed all over the world. The problem is that Tor only hides metadata when the adversary cannot observe the traffic in specific parts of the network. So as a result, Tor makes strong assumptions about the adversary's power. A more recent system that withstands a stronger adversary than Tor is Vuvuzela. Vuvuzela introduces several servers that are arranged in a chain, and each of these servers shuffles messages, adds cover traffic, and removes layers of encryption like in Tor. The caveat is that at least one of the servers must be correct, as otherwise the messages are not guaranteed to be shuffled or hidden by noise. One last proposal is Descent. In Descent, users form a peer-to-peer network and then send specially crafted messages to everyone else. Descent is great because it hides metadata even when all infrastructure is compromised, but it supports few users due to the all-to-all communication pattern that is required to do so. What we want is a system that supports many users and that also withstands a full infrastructure compromise. Unfortunately, none of the prior systems quite achieved this goal, which is why we propose Pwng. Pwng hides metadata associated with a communication between two or more users, even when all infrastructure and every other user in the system is compromised. And it does so while supporting point-to-point and group communication. Finally, our deployment of Pwng on four servers can process hundreds of thousands of messages per minute. And since Pwng's computations are actually embarrassingly parallel, Pwng can scale out with more servers to achieve lower end-to-end latency or higher throughput. In the rest of this talk, I'm going to describe how we build Pwng and the concrete cost and performance of our implementation. So let me talk about Pwng's architecture first. So in Pwng, clients do not send messages directly to each other. Instead, clients place messages in a key value store, which we consider part of our untrusted infrastructure. Clients are going to deposit encrypted messages with put requests, and then other clients are going to get these messages with get requests. Now, of course, we need to be a bit careful about how we actually implement the put and the get procedures, because there's plenty of metadata that can leak in the process. For this talk, I'm only going to focus on how Pwng hides the participants of a conversation, since many of the prior systems have very good ways to hide the other metadata, and we borrow heavily from them. For example, to hide the frequency of communication, this amounts to adding cover traffic. One issue with our existing interface is that the put request just leaks all the information right away. In particular, notice how the key, which is this first parameter here in the put request, leaks the identity of the recipient. Well, one way to address this is just to use an opaque label that only the sender and the recipient know. And this allows clients to continue to communicate, but it also prevents the put request from leaking the recipient's identity. In the paper, we talk about how these labels are generated and how clients can agree on these labels. But using a label is not sufficient. The fact that users are issuing put and get requests at all leaks information. In particular, an adversary can observe that A is issuing a put request and that B is issuing a get request. Now, while this information on its own is not sufficient to link A and B, notice how the two requests have the same inputs and outputs, which is what I'm highlighting here with these orange arrows. So in this example, the adversary can easily associate the two as being part of the same conversation and can determine that A is communicating with B. So to address this, what we need to do is to break this association. And the way we accomplish this is by making the inputs and outputs of the GET request appear different from those of the PUT request. At a very high level, we ensure that the GET request takes as input a query queue, which encodes the label. So this query does not reveal this query queue does not reveal the label. And the output of the GET request is an answer A that represents an encoded version of the encrypted message. So one way to think of this is as another layer of encryption on the encrypted message. The point is that under this arrangement, the PUT and the GET request no longer share any distinguishable inputs or outputs. So none of the providers can tell who is talking to whom. Now, you might be thinking, well, how does the server use the encoded label? How does it create the answer? And why does it not learn anything in the process? Well, perhaps surprisingly, the server can actually process this query obliviously to generate the answer without ever learning which message was requested. In this figure, the table is representing the database of the server, which contains the messages of all prior PUT requests. And the cryptographic primitive that is going to enable us to go from this query to this answer is called private information retrieval, or PIR. Now, without going into the details of how PIR is actually implemented, one of the key takeaways is that there is no free lunch. In order to hide which message was requested, answering a query requires the server to perform cryptographic operations over every single message in its database. So the costs are linear in the number of messages. So what I've described so far is sufficient to hide the sender and the recipient of a message. However, many applications benefit from having clients retrieve multiple messages at once. For example, group messaging apps like Slack, bulletin boards like Twitter, or when clients want to just retrieve a batch of emails. The issue is that under Pong, these applications will need to issue many GET requests, which is kind of a bummer because these GETs are pretty expensive. So let me illustrate the precise issue with an example. So suppose that a client wants to get three messages, in this case, the blue, the green, and the red message. The client first generates a query for each label and then sends these queries to the server. The server can then process each query independently and return the answers to the client. If we look at the total number of operations that the server performs, which I'm showing here at the bottom right corner, this number is linear in the number of queries. And this is terrible because, one, as I said before, GET operations are expensive. And two, as this abstract picture makes painfully clear, we are doing nearly the same exact thing three times, which should make all of us very upset. So the natural question that we ask ourselves is, can we remove this redundancy and amortize the cost of retrieving multiple messages? Of course, the answer is yes, and we have a couple of ideas in the paper to do this, and I'm going to tell you about some of them. So our first idea consists of partitioning the server's database into K buckets. And there's a particular way in which we do this, but here I'm only going to communicate the effect. So if the server has multiple buckets, the client can issue one query that is executed obliviously on each bucket. So this lets the server produce an answer from each bucket at a cost that is lower than before. There is, however, a big issue, which is that this scheme is overly optimistic. In particular, it assumes that the client is interested in messages that are in different buckets, in this case, the blue, the green, and the red. But what if the client wanted to get the blue and the gray message? Well, we're in trouble. And the reason that we're in trouble is that queries are deterministic. So a single query can only produce one answer per bucket. So what's the solution? Well, just use multiple queries. The server just executes queries on each bucket and produces all the messages that the client wants. The drawback of this approach is that it adds tons of overhead, especially network costs. Now, observe that a lot of the answers are completely useless, as they're either redundant, in the case of the second red answer, or the client is not interested in them, as is the case with the two green answers. So this is where our second idea comes into play, which we call aliasing. So under aliasing, we store messages under two distinct labels, and the property that we want from these labels is that they map to different buckets. So here I'm just depicting the result of performing aliasing, and I'm showing the new labels as with just a triangle just for convenience. In practice, these labels have no structure because they're just the output of a pseudorandom function. So one thing to note is that aliasing doubles the number of messages in the system, in the server's database, which is a bit concerning because all of our costs depend on the number of messages in each bucket. So we're effectively doubling our costs. However, do not panic yet, because aliasing has a key benefit, which is that clients now have a choice. Clients have more flexibility on how they create their queries, since they can decide from which bucket to get a particular message. And this ability to choose allows clients to reap the load balancing benefits of having two choices. Again, I won't go into the details, but let me show you the effect just by going back to our prior example. So in this case, the client wants to get, again, the blue and the gray and the red label. And under partitioning, the client needed to use two queries. But with aliasing, it only needs one. Because with this query, the client can get the blue message from bucket one, the gray message from bucket two, and then the red message from bucket three. And in this particular example, the computational costs are roughly the same, but notice how we have no useless answers and therefore no network overhead. So aliasing is great at reducing network costs, and in many cases, it actually reduces computational costs too. Let me show you why. We can visualize the benefits of our two techniques by just looking at the number of queries that are required in order to for the client to get any K messages. So here, the x-axis shows the number of buckets, which is equal to the number of messages that the client wants, which is equals to K. And then the y-axis shows the number of queries required to get any K messages. So using only single gets requires linear cost. So you have this line here. But as we saw in our first example, partitioning is not really better for small K, but as K increases, the probability that the client will want many messages from the same bucket drops exponentially. So with very high probability, the client can issue fewer than K queries and still get all of the K messages that he or she wants. And finally, we have aliasing, which further decreases the number of queries required, even though these queries are twice as expensive, but notice how aliasing buys us over 2x savings in the number of queries, so we still save some computational costs. But most importantly, it reduces network costs. And this concludes my overview of the design, but in the paper, we also discuss how to encode buckets so that one query is sufficient to retrieve any K messages. And we also show how clients can construct these queries if they don't know the exact layout of the service database, which is usually a prerequisite for PIR. So the prior technique allows Punk to work well for applications that fetch multiple messages. But before I could quantify the benefits, let me tell you about our prototype and evaluation setup. So Punk has a client and a server component. Both of them are written in Rust. And all of the server-side computation is just expressed as a data flow graph, which makes it very easy for us to just deploy it on an IL cluster and scale it out automatically without having to deal with coordination. In this evaluation, I'm going to answer two questions. First, how many users can Punk support? And second, what is the throughput of Punk when retrieving messages in batches? And I'm going to answer these questions in the context of our experimental setup. So we deployed Punk server across 64 data flow workers running on 4 VMs. And the way that it works is that all clients are going to issue put requests. The server is going to process all of them, and then the clients are going to issue the get requests afterwards. And then we're just going to repeat this process over and over. And we also are going to compare Punk's performance to that achieved by two existing systems, so Descent and Vuvuzela. And we ran both of these systems in our testbed. So to answer the first question, we first need to upper bound the acceptable end-to-end delay of a communication. So we're just going to choose 1 minute. And what we find is that Punk supports three orders of magnitude more users than Descent. Now, I know this sounds massive, but to be fair, Descent provides a stronger property than Punk and Vuvuzela. In particular, Descent can be used to hide the sender's identity from everyone, including the recipient. So it can be used, for example, to support anonymous whistleblowers, for example. Whereas Punk and Vuvuzela, they target two-way communication where the sender and the recipient wish to talk to each other. Punk supports 32 times fewer users than Vuvuzela. Now, this is without question a big limitation. But to be fair, Punk does withstand a stronger adversary and has other features such as long-lived messages and group communication. Now, in the previous slide, I showed how many users the systems can support. But what about their throughput? Recall that in Punk, users can get many messages more cheaply than getting messages one by one. So how does Punk compare under this setting? So in this experiment, every client sends and receives 64 messages. So the x-axis here shows different numbers of communicating users, and the y-axis depicts the system's throughput in a logarithmic scale. So Small changes do mean a lot because it's logarithmic. What we see is that Punk's throughput is still lower than Vuvuzela's, but the ratio at 131,000 users is actually somewhat reasonable. I mean, it's only 6x. This shows that batching can significantly improve Punk's performance for applications where users get multiple messages. Now, while our work makes progress towards supporting private communication without trusted infrastructure, it has several limitations. First, network costs are still a bit higher than we want, especially when getting multiple messages at once. Second, we have been unable to design an efficient dialing protocol whereby clients can contact each other without any prior interaction. We do have a pretty naive one, but it's not efficient. However, we're in luck because I think the next talk is going to give us some insight on how to solve this and other bootstrapping problems. Finally, while Punk does not rely on services or providers for integrity or privacy, Punk needs them for availability. And this is because ISPs could simply just refuse to route network packets, or because Punk servers could just refuse to answer queries. So in summary, Punk allows users to communicate privately, even if all infrastructure is compromised. Punk supports tens of thousands of users, and it introduces a procedure that improves the efficiency of retrieving multiple messages at once. And this procedure is actually quite general and can be used in other contexts. With this, I conclude my talk, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Hi, that was a great talk. Thank you. I'm curious, in the example where you show the queries that are being sent and the answers that are being given back, it looks as though when the client sends a single query, it matches both gray and red at the same time. And so the query is matching multiple keys. Why can you not use the same mechanism in the previous example where you send two queries to also match in different buckets?
Could you repeat the first part of your question?
Yes, sorry, I'll try again. The query that is sent here matches both gray, blue, and red, correct?
Sure, yes.
Right? Which seems to imply that this query can actually match multiple keys.
Not necessarily. What this is saying is that this query has actually three parts. And with it, each component, you can match one element from each component. So you can match effectively one message from each bucket because of the way the query is constructed.
I see. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.